The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly Fitbar Special. A rocking Hampden gets to witness the goal of the tournament as Patrick Schick bends one in from the halfway line. David Marshall, meme for life. The Scots create lots but can't finish anything. What did Steve Clarke get right and what does he change for Friday? Elsewhere, Slovakia upset the Poles as we see the first red card of the tournament. And an exhibition of completed passes for Spain helps them to a goalless draw with Sweden, who intentionally crossed the halfway line three times. We have a Parrot update, some more praise, I promise that's the end of that. Your questions and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, for the duration, Barry Glendenning, welcome.
Hi, Max, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Jacob Steinberg, hello.
Hello.
Jim Burke, how are you?
Okay.
Stifled and okay there. And the Guardian Scottish football correspondent Ewan Murray here, not for a long time but for a good time, live from a hotel bar in Glasgow with a pint of IPA. How are you, Ewan?
Yeah, but the same as Jim, I would say. Actually, he summed it up pretty well.
Right, let's get on with Scotland 0, the Czech Republic 2 then. Roscoe says, can we have a referendum and withdraw from the Euros? Hugh says, what's worse, a life of monotonous 50-plus hour working weeks or the hope Scotland give you, the heartless bastards? And Sam says, how much more did Ewan enjoy today's exciting game in Hampden over yesterday's, quote, desperately dull affair at Wembley, which I believe was your quote?
I get a lot of criticism for that. I thought the England-Croatia game was desperately dull. I understand it was hot, and I understand it's the first game of a tournament, but I just thought it was a boring game. I mean, you watched the Dutch against Ukraine at night, and it was fantastic, really good entertainment. That's maybe the other end of the spectrum, but I thought the England game was dull, and I thought praise was lavished on England, not untypically, was a bit over the top, to be honest, but there we are. I didn't realise it was such a controversial view, but apparently it was.
Anyway, we're not here to talk about that game.
Let's talk about that game. Can we talk about that game? That would be fine.
Ian says, under what circumstances is it possible to say the Czech goalscorer's name without slipping into a Sean Connery impression? Which is a very good question. The goal is a brilliant strike, Barry. It's not that sort of the distance of how far a goal out merits how good it is, but it's the longest range goal ever in the history of the Euros, 49.7 yards. And that photo from behind Patrick Schick, where it's like an amazing draw of a five or a six sign. It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, it was. The technique was just incredible. It's so difficult. You know, obviously he'd spotted the keeper way, way off his line. Just the execution of the idea was incredible. And you could sort of tell as soon as he left his boot that is going in, and Marshall ain't going to get anywhere near it. His commendably comic efforts to get back were bordering on the heroic, but no, he was never going to get that. And Schick was just... That is going to take some beating for goal of the tournament.
Jim, can you just talk us through your emotions at that moment?
Well, first of all, we started the half quite badly. They had a couple of chances. Marshall had a couple of saves to make. But then Che Adams started to show a bit. I think was, you know, again, we were starting to just get that look as if we could maybe just level it up. Henry hits the bar, which probably was behind his reasoning to try and crack it in from 45 yards, which then the ball breaks. And as you say, Barry, as soon as he got it, I just said in myself, I thought, he's going to, isn't he? He's just going to. And then there goes all hope.
Ewan, how was it in the stadium?
Yeah, the goal was one of these slow motion moments that you get very occasionally in football. The ball, I think it was in the air for 3 seconds, but it felt like it hung in the air for 30 minutes. And that's right, I mean, the same thing. As soon as it left its boot, you thought, uh-oh, that's a goal. I actually think, the goalkeeper thing, I'm always kind of loath to criticise goalkeepers because that position, I tend to find goalkeeping experts have got great explanations as to why things aren't the goalkeeper's fault. But I can't get away from the fact of how high up the pitch David Marshall was. And when the Czech striker says that he noticed how high up the pitch David Marshall was in the first half, it's not a very good look for the goalkeeper. I would say in Jack Hendry's defence, well, one, he scored a long range, not that long range enough, but he scored a long range goal against the Netherlands, and he had hit the bar, as Jim said. And I think when he took on that shot and it was blocked, Jack Hendry would be entitled to think what happened next wasn't going to happen next. So I would slightly let him off the hook.
It is unlucky. It's unlucky if you take a shot from 30 yards and the touch after the next touch, the ball is in your net. Like, if you said this is what's going to happen, yeah, you'd be like, that'd be ridiculous.
That's why I would give him a slight pat. The other thing I would add to this, it was quite a windy day in Glasgow today, but it was really pretty breezy. I mean, a golfer hitting a shot even from that distance would be adjusting the target for the wind. So the technique, you know, is even better when you factor the wind into the fact he scored that goal. It was an amazing moment.
Wiley T says, on reflection, was it wrong to send David Marshall forward for the Scottish corner? Adam, why did Scotland go with a rush goalie option? And Ben says, is Marshall's positioning for the second goal something English fans can thank Bielsa for? Surely he was marking the centre spot due to Pep's influence on the British game, which is a nice reference to yesterday's pod. I'm giving Marshall a bit of a pass here as well. Should I be more critical?
I thought that the positioning was, as has been said, was just pretty strange. And as was said as well, I think that guy, Hendry, got criticised for taking that shot on from where it was. But, you know, if it had just flown over the bar and not been blocked by a Czech defender and then broken to a guy who, with a ridiculously angled shot, then sticks it in from 50 yards out, he's not getting criticised for it. And the goalkeeper was in a really strange position for what, even though it took a moment of genius from Schick to do that.
I presume, and I'm happy to stand corrected, that the logic for Marshall being where he was is to mop up if the ball is lumped out of defence and to prevent any attacker.
Steve Clark referred to it as kind of sweeping after the game, and he was asked about it. Yeah, that's entirely. I mean, I haven't noticed him doing this regularly, but maybe I had no reason to notice him doing it regularly. But Steve Clark seemed to regard it as nothing out of the ordinary. The other point maybe worth making is, I don't like picking on players in this context, but Stephen O'Donnell, who played, you know, the right side of Scotland's midfield, they played with the back three. Stephen O'Donnell had a pretty torrid afternoon. He didn't play well at all. Now, he would have been the pass for Jack Hendry to play the ball out wide. And whether Jack Hendry thought, I'm not giving it to him, I'm better off shooting, that may have formed part of the decision-making there. Because O'Donnell, he was eventually taken off, and he just, you know, he plays for Motherwell. He probably technically is the weak link in that team, but he's never really let Scotland down at all. And I, you know, as I say, I don't really want to pick on him. But part of it might have been O'Donnell was struggling. Hendry thought, I'm better whacking this shot than playing out wide to him. But we're all second-guessing what the thought process was there.
Jim, more than a couple of times you put your head in your hands in the last 10 minutes. I just sort of think about the hope. I know you texted me earlier going you were basically just shitting yourself, but, you know, Scotland did that brilliant video. I think Pat Nevin narrated some of it, like a really nice poem, with the shots of the penalty shootout that got you qualified and some other great goals for Scotland. Martin Compston had done a Tennent's advert, like Jack and Nora. You know, he had all these moments. Now that you've lost the opening game, like, how flat do you feel? Or do you feel like you heard the players after saying, we've still got a great chance to get out of the group, we've got to go again, it's a free hit on Friday?
Well, believe it or not, I kind of do feel that way, because I didn't think we were that bad, and I genuinely think that the draw, you know, in terms of chances created, and, you know, we weren't pinned back for 90 minutes, we weren't, you know, we had our chances, we didn't take them. Now, on the subject of O'Donnell, Ewan, I may be being overly critical of him, but when he went out to cut out that cross, first of all, I thought he was quite slow in going out to do it for the first goal. But what I noticed as well, he put his hands behind his back very consciously. And I thought, are you thinking more about not giving away the penalty than you are about stopping this cross coming in? You know, because it was a very conscious way that he did it.
That wasn't his. I wondered why he was there in the first place. That wasn't his side of the pitch. He had to make a lot of ground over to go over there. And I, again, I would need to see that again. But I thought, why was he in that position? I just thought, early on, I mean, the first few minutes, he ran the ball out the pitch. Ryan Christie ran into him when he kind of semi-promising attack in the first half. He just kind of had one of those days. And you know, I would be surprised if James Forrest, for example, doesn't play at Wembley on on Friday in that position, just to change the dynamic of that right side of the team. And what you say is true. I mean, Scotland, I don't normally place too much emphasis on stats, but they had 57% possession, 15 attempts on goal. And they do this. They do seem to create decent chances, but they're not taking enough of them. And that's why, you know, we can go on to Max if you like, but the decision to not to play Che Adams, who has vastly improved the Scottish team every time he's played, as far as I'm concerned, to me was a real surprise. And that, I think, is a reason to criticise Steve Clarke, because that looked strange at the time, and obviously when the result goes the way it does, it looks even stranger.
It's worth mentioning, there is some music in the bar. I don't know what music it is. I can't
quite
hear
it.
People listening to the pod, when you're speaking, be like, why does Ewan come with Muzak? Is that part of his deal for the pod? It's like, now, just to jazz Ewan up a bit, whenever he's on, we'll have some kind of like sort of saxophone music in the background.
Just make me sound interesting.
Ewan Murray and Kenny G.
Jacob, I don't know if you know the answer to this question, but are the Czech Republic good?
Yeah, they are good. They look good today, and they looked better than Croatia did, and they looked good when they beat England in qualifying for this tournament in 2019, whenever that was, whatever year that was. And they beat them in Prague, and they gave England a load of problems that evening. Came back from a goal down. They, you know, looked as strong and as tough and as physical with quality added to that as they did today. We all know that Suchek is a good player from what we've seen from him at West Ham this season. Obviously, everybody knows about Kufal at right back, but then, you know, Schick, compared to what Croatia, I thought, had up front on Sunday at Wembley, was much more dangerous. He could have scored before he did. I thought, again, that Marshall was maybe a little bit slow getting to the header for the first goal, but it was still very powerful, imposing forward play from Schick, who's a, you know, really good player. He's been, I remember seeing him for Roma when they got to the semi-finals of the Champions League when they lost to Liverpool, and I was in Rome for that comeback against Barcelona, and he played up front, and he missed a load of chances that night, I remember, but he was very, very dangerous. The link-up play was very impressive, and he kept getting into positions. So he was young. Well, obviously, he was younger back then, but he was a young player at that stage. And I think he seems like he's, you know, developing very well. He's an impressive player. And I think that they'll give England on, next Tuesday, a tougher game, more to think about than Croatia did. They'll be an interesting side, I think, in this tournament. And I don't think it's necessarily such a sort of, I don't know, such a huge disappointment for Scotland to have lost that game. You probably think they've got a better chance against Croatia.
What was the atmosphere like, Ewan? I saw Miguel Delaney tweeting a video of yes sir, I can boogie, and saying this is the best moment I've had in the last 16 months. And I'm like, I don't know if Miguel lives
That says a lot about Miguel, doesn't it?
But it looked great. It looked so good.
It was fantastic. I mean, the official attendance was 9,800 and something, which raises a few questions, because they were allowed 12,500, I think. But and Hamden actually routinely gets criticism for the atmosphere it can generate. But before kickoff, as ever, the football got in the way. But before kickoff, was fantastic. It felt like a much bigger crowd. The Baccarat song, as you said, was terrific. The Flower of Scotland was terrific. The level of excitement, that's the thing. And Jacob says it's not such a terrible result for Scotland, and I tend to agree. It's just in terms of how keyed up everyone was, how excited everyone was, the anticipation about this game. You know, it was like that bubble was popped. You know, that's what it's about. Not really the context of, are the Czech Republic a better team than Scotland? Well, they possibly are. So, yeah, it was fantastic until the game started. Even the early stages of the game, Scotland had a few flurries forward. It was fantastic, but not for the first time. The football then got in the way.
I think it would be worse, or maybe it is worse, because Scotland lost despite playing quite well. I don't think the Czech Republic were conspicuously better than them. They just took their chances, whereas Scotland didn't.
I agree. The Scotland thing's quite funny, because I said this the last time I was on the show. After Scotland qualified, they went through a run of games. I think Israel, Slovakia, Austria, where they played pretty poorly. And the general consensus was they would struggle in this tournament. They weren't in great form. They missed a lot of chances. This has been a bit of a theme. They miss a lot of chances in games. But then they had this friendly against the Netherlands, and they were excellent. And that one game kind of changed the mood. and I was a little bit wary of it, saying, well, right, they can't quite be that good and they weren't quite that bad. So, and this is, you know, they haven't qualified for anything for 23 years. It's a big deal. But I think maybe the excitement post-Netherlands has fueled a lot of the disappointment post-Czech Republic. Whereas before that Netherlands game, they weren't really playing that well anyway.
Did you fall into that trap, Jim?
I've said on here before, Argentina 78 scarred me to a degree that thousands of pounds of therapy wasn't able to fix, so you're not going to be able to fix it, Max, okay? But I was caught up in it a bit. It was just great to be there. Do you know, because it has just been, the last 23 years have just, for most Scottish people, just about supporting whoever was playing England, you know? So it was just nice to actually get, you know, we're there. And thing is, we're not out of it yet. The only thing I'm starting to notice, so there's not a lot of draws in this first round. And this is lining up for a lot of Austria-Germany. Is it Austria-Germany in 82? When he just passed the ball across the back four, there could be a lot of results that suit both team games coming up. And that's the only thing that kind of concerns me.
I think you really kind of need 4 points. I think you might get away with it with three, but I would be doubtful. So I think that
Northern Ireland got through with 3 points, didn't they? In 2016, Portugal drew three games
that's
and got
right.
through.
That's right.
It might just be one win.
That's right. But they, well, I think, was that the, I looked at this before. That was an anomaly, I think, and I'm not sure. I don't know. I just think they're behind the eight ball. I always felt today was the game they kind of had to win, and then they were in a great position because I would then have fancied them to get a point. But now, I'm not so sure.
Barry, you've talked a lot about Kieran Tierney this season, and he was a miss, a big miss, wasn't he?
Yeah, I saw the Scottish team and got quite a shock. I presumed he hadn't been dropped, so he was out injured. And I'm not saying he would have kept out either of the goals, but he certainly wouldn't have kept out the second one. But he brings something to the Scotland party that the other centre halves don't, and he's sort of rampaging runs forward, and he's given license to get forward as much as he can. And that was noticeably absent today. And I mean, further up the pitch, I thought Thomas Souček really did a number on John McGinn as well. He didn't have a great game for Scotland.
He did a lot of fouling. He did a lot of Fernandinho style tactical kicking.
Souček is very good at fouling and getting away with it, and just fouling and fouling and fouling. And he always looks very kind of, you know, pained when he gets the foul given against him as well.
I just thought John McGinn kept falling over the ball. He has games like this. He just falls over the ball. Nothing kind of works. Hey, John McGinn, you know, it's like 2 out of 10 or 9 out of 10. But today was 2 out of 10. I just thought nothing. He almost sold a goal very early in the game, but he just fell over the ball, claimed for a non-existent foul. The Tierney thing was massive. I mean, Tierney has been Scotland's best player for umpteen games. And just what Barry says, he's not just a defender. He pops up all over the pitch and he sets the tone really for the tempo of the team. And that was a real, real blow. And I only hope he's back for Friday night, because that would be a huge difference to the way Scotland play, not just the way Scotland defend, but the kind of pace with which Scotland play, the tempo with which they play. You know, that was a real blow. I mean, you wait 23 years and your best player can't make the first game. I mean, it's, how's your luck?
Simon says, are you more or less worried about Scotland after that, Max? And I'm more worried. I know England played well, and I know, you know, Scotland were quite toothless, but I think if Tierney comes back in, I don't know. I was surprised Gilmore wasn't playing, and I don't know what you think, Jim. I think he's such a brilliant footballer and he hasn't played a lot this season under Thomas Tuchel, but I think he would want the ball. He would make, I don't know, he's just a great footballer, I think.
Again, I speak to a couple of boys after the game and we were talking about, do you bring Forrest in or whatever? And I think Clark's going to be tempted to try and take the sting out of the game early on. I don't think he'll put Forrest. I don't think he'll be expansive. And I think that's where he may stick with the same kind of midfield for the game on Friday night, just to hope that he maybe change it in the second half, get to half-time level and see what we can do then. But I don't know. It's I would like to see Gilmour because, as you say, he's the sort of player that when he gets on the ball, he's going to make people think. And I think he would give England problems. So yeah, I'd like to see him in.
Jacob, from the other side of it, you've been following England. You were at the game yesterday. How different do you think England's 11 will be on Friday?
Well, interesting. I don't think he'll make too many changes. It's hard to see exactly where you make the changes. I mean, obviously, everybody was annoyed initially about Kieran Trippier playing at left back. Southgate loves Trippier and calls him his warrior. And I think partly that was potentially something that he did yesterday because, as probably many people have said, because of Tyrone Mings playing and maybe wanted just a little bit more protection there. So maybe he, against Scotland, if he thinks that they're a little bit weaker than Croatia were, maybe he brings in Chilwell or Shaw. Judging by the fact that Shaw was the one on the bench, quite possibly it'll be Luke Shaw. I thought Foden, after that amazing start when he hit the post and he was charging around like mad, I think in that weather he seemed to use up quite a lot of energy. So potentially Jack Grealish might be someone who comes in. Then again, it was Rashford who came on before Jack Grealish yesterday. He might think again, Grealish against maybe a potentially deeper defence. Is he going to be somebody who could potentially open it up? But if he comes in for Foden, that's not his position. On the right, he plays on the left. And Sterling did enough yesterday to keep himself in the side. So it's relatively hard to see where you make the changes. And I wouldn't be surprised to see a pretty similar team. Maybe just the left back and potentially Foden comes out with somebody coming in for him.
Jacob, how much do you think these English players and coaching staff care about Scotland? Is this a big game to them? Because we would assume it doesn't really matter to England. This is our big game. It's a big deal for us. They don't care. Is that actually true or is it not?
No, I think they definitely know. I think Declan Rice, proud Englishman, Barry, was saying yesterday that they all know what it's going to be like and they're not underestimating them. Declan Rice was, he was talking about, and obviously this was before he'd seen Scotland play today, but he was talking about the threats up front with Shea Adams and he was praising him. He called Scott McTominay and John McGinn, I think he called them warriors. Mentioned Andy Robertson and Kieran Tierney. So they're fully aware of how dangerous potentially Scotland could be. I think he said it, this is a game that's sort of going to be one of the biggest that any of them will ever play in their career. So he said they'll be ready. Yeah, I think they know. And I think that with a crowd there as well, it's going to be very interesting. I intend to get to the game quite early on Friday and try to avoid anything outside Wembley.
And I know, Jim, you'll like this question because, as far as I can tell, you spend most of your life tweeting pictures of doner meat. What is Barca Jim and Ewan Murray's comfort food from the chip shop takeaway to ease the pain of the Scotland defeat?
Oh, good question, Jim.
I am all about the King Rib Supper.
Talk me through it.
Well, it's some kind of spiced pork product of indeterminate origin. Okay. And obviously it is battered, it's formed into a rib-like shape, battered and deep fried. It's fantastic.
Ewan?
A haggis supper, actually. Haggis from a chip shop. I'm about to go through Edinburgh, there you get a haggis supper with, you guys know, Jim will know, but in Edinburgh it's not salt and vinegar, it's salt and sauce, and the sauce is a mixture of brown sauce and vinegar. It's beautiful. You only get it in Edinburgh. So salt and sauce on a haggis supper. You've just put that in my head. That's exactly what I'm going to do in about an hour and a half.
All right, well, that'll do for part one. Ewan, we'll let you enjoy your pint and the dulcet tones of whatever that music that you may have heard on the pod or you may not. The rest of us will be back in just a second to look back at Spain versus Sweden. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. I just wanted to take a minute to tell you about this new Guardian podcast we think you're going to love. It's called Comfort Eating and it's hosted by our restaurant critic, Grace Dent. Jim Burke is our first guest, where he talks about deep-fried pork ribs. You might know Grace for her refined palate and her reviews of the UK's best restaurants. This show is a much less highbrow affair. Actually, you could be in luck, Jim. From the 15th of June, you can join Grace each week as she invites a famous guest to sit down with her and reveal what they really eat when they're home alone. There's kebab meat on chips. Well, I hadn't read this yet. Seriously, like, this is your way in. Kebab meat on chips, fried peanut butter sandwiches, and lots of crisps on the menu as Grace finds out about well-known people's lives through the comfort foods they love. Listen now to Comfort Eating with Grace Dent from The Guardian on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. I genuinely thought at the start of that read, I'm going to be lying through my teeth as I say this podcast sounds good. By the end of it, I think...
Amen.
I'm listening away.
My girlfriend was in Edinburgh last night and she just told me they went into Chippy after, like, when they were all going home, and a girl walked in and said, can I have two deep-fried toffee crisps?
it's because one is never enough.
Exactly.
Right? That's the rule with deep-fried toffee crisps. Anyway, Spain 0, Sweden 0. Jeremy says, does anyone publicly love Tiki-Taka but privately hate it? Risk-free nonsense. The thing about this game, Jacob, was that they were so in character, these teams. You know, Spain just passing forever and Sweden just refusing to cross the halfway line.
Yeah, it was... I mean, I don't know if Spain exactly Tiki-Taka either. I mean, that Luis Enrique doesn't really want to play like that, does he? He wants to make it more, well, just quicker and more aggressive, doesn't he? But I think the issues that they've got are obviously that they did create chances in that game. They had enough to win it easily, and it's going to be an issue if you've got Alvaro Morata up front. The first one was the first chance that he had in the first half. You just give him... Just don't expect him to score, do you, when he goes into that position? We've seen him so many times for Chelsea. Just remember him in the Juventus-Porto game in the Champions League last season, missing so many chances. And then, you know, I struggled to see why Moreno, who had a really good season for Villarreal, didn't start. I confess that I haven't seen too much of him, but judging by the numbers, he seems to be a much more clinical finisher than Morata. But saying that, I thought he should have scored as well. They had enough chances.
Yeah, you make a good point, actually. The first 20 minutes, Spain were really quite bright in that game, and it just... because it's literally finished a second ago and it just sort of got slower and slower and slower, and Sweden defended better in the second half. It's recency bias that I'm suffering from. Neil says, is Morata the most disappointing player ever? Real Madrid to Juventus, to Real Madrid to Chelsea, to Atleti to Juventus, yet no one has seen him have a good game. I mean, there speaks someone who never watched Devon White or Robbie Turner in a Cambridge shirt. But it is interesting, Barry, isn't it, that, as Jacob said, you didn't expect him to score that chance. And really, if you're starting striker in a tournament, you don't expect him to score that chance, it's going to be an issue.
Yeah, I must say I did expect him to score it, and he didn't, but nobody seemed hugely surprised. I would probably have started Moreno as well, but as Jacob said, he too missed a sitter, so it's possibly unfair to single out Morata. I found myself watching this game like at the final whistle. I'm recording immediately after the final whistle, so I haven't really had a huge amount of time to reflect and gather my thoughts, but wondering how on earth Spain didn't win and how on earth Sweden didn't win. So a draw is probably a fair result, because Sweden arguably had the two best chances of the game. Isaac was... I was hugely impressed with him, a guy I knew almost nothing about, but he was outstanding and probably deserved a goal.
Yeah, actually, I mean, his miss. Alexander Isak, Colin Miller writing, raised in Solna by Eritrean parents, joined AIK age 6, debuted age 16, scored 13 league goals before his 17th birthday, already scored 72 senior goals, still only age 21. The Real Sociedad striker's very, very good indeed. And he missed that chance in the first half. But, Jim, he also set up Marcus Berg for the best miss of the game, didn't he?
Oh, yes, fantastic. I think the only person that's going to be happier is Mikel Lustig, who kind of tripped over his own feet in the box as well, thinking, that's the Swedish meme. And then, of course, step forward and somebody makes an even worse miss. So he's thinking to himself, thank you, God, at that point. Oh, it's a dreadful one. Dreadful.
Nick's saying as well, why is Rodrigo sat on his backside in Leeds when Morata couldn't hit a cow's ass with a banjo? Yeah, I mean, the Berg miss is one of those where you... I don't know how you can miss it. I mean, I have missed chances like that, but I'm not a professional footballer.
What I found quite funny about that was because Isaac, is it Isaac or Isaac?
Isaac, everyone was saying, which reminded me very much of Heroes Season 1 and Mr. Isaac, which is the cultural reference that no one will get from this pod after yesterday me talking about Only the Young from X Factor 2014 whenever I hear Frankie de Jong. But anyway, carry on, Barry.
Yeah, Isaac did everything perfectly to put the ball on a plate for him. He missed and was quite rightfully, you know, face down in the dirt in shame, one thinking about what he'd just not done. And then Isaac went over and helped him to his feet. Now, I like to think that, you know, while he was performing this magnanimous, helpful gesture, he was going, "You fucking..." Because he could not have done more.
Yeah, it was interesting that they took Isaac off. Ivorino saying, do you think Jana Anderson replaced Isaac because he was too good tonight and their plan was to not score at all? Ronnie says, why Sweden aren't mandated to play their games at 1 p.m.? They should never be at prime time. It's interesting, Jacob, isn't it? In my mind, there's a romance about the Sweden international team. But when you actually think about it, they're quite often sort of obdurate and sad.
That's how they always are, really. Why do you think there's a romance?
I don't know.
Is it because they got to the semi-finals in 1994 or something? Yeah, maybe it's that.
It's all based in 94, yeah.
It reminds me of watching Ireland in the last few years, like going back to the trap days. And except if Ireland had been playing in this game, they'd have lost 6-0. But it's a similar kind of thing.
Yeah, someone was saying to me that they just look like Burnley. Today,
I think Burnley have got more bite.
Well, Chris Wood, if you put Chris Wood in that team, then Sweden win tonight 3-0.
Chris Wood's son. I mean, I spent a lot, I couldn't help it, right? Whenever they said Daniel's son, I thought of the Karate Kid, and that was the thing that got me through this game. And then I think Olner had a great shot, and it was blocked, not quite wax on, wax off, but it was just like great block from Daniel's son. And I was like, I'm happy now. This game is... Well, the thing that I needed to happen in this game has happened. Anyway.
Pedri was good. I don't know. Pedri was good.
Yeah, Pedri was good. Some other questions, not really serious questions about the game. Philip saying, with Enrique electing to sit on a water cooler in the technical zone, how much credit, responsibility does Bielsa have to take for Spain's success or failure in the tournament? Ewan says, thoughts on the size of the... technical areas in the Spain-Sweden game. How would you best utilise it? They were huge, weren't they? Ben saying, are these the biggest technical boxes you've ever seen? Ben, another Ben saying, it's a good 9-iron from one side to the other.
That's stadium, it's Seville, so neither of the Seville teams call it home, and it was sort of built in the hope that Seville would get the Olympics way back, and they didn't. Probably because, well, you could say it might have been because it would be too hot to have the Olympics in Seville in the middle of summer. But then, you know, look where the next World Cup is. But so it's quite a bit of a white elephant, I think, a very unloved stadium. I know, Jim, you've been in it. How did you find it?
I found it. It was very disappointing after a whole day's drinking and thinking I was going to watch Celtic beat Porto. And so, no, my memories aren't of the best today. You know what I mean? I have not had, we've mentioned Argentina 78 and Seville 2003. Okay, this is not what you should be doing for people, Barry. This is PTSD as we live and breathe.
Seems very presumptuous to build the stadium before you've got the Olympics. I mean, I know people tend, sometimes major tournaments or events are given to people or they know ahead of time that they might have it. That seems very presumptuous. And that'll do for part two. Part three, we'll do Poland 1, Slovakia 2. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Probably the first upset of the tournament then. Poland 1, Slovakia 2. Baz, you did the minute by minute. Did they deserve it?
I think they did deserve it on the balance of play. Poland will probably think they were hard done by the ref. We'll get to that shortly. But Slovakia is set up to play on the counter. Brilliant play by Oliver Mack, who got the ball with his back to goal out by the touchline, managed to turn, bamboozle two Polish defenders and then shoot in off. Well, his goal was very unfairly, I think, credited to Wojciech Szczęsny, who won't want it. But Mack isn't getting it, even though he deserves it. And then Poland were pretty poor in the first half, came out roaring out of the traps in the second. Emma Hayes on I think she was on ITV. I thought she was excellent on COCOMs, although some of the stuff she was coming out with I found a little bit complicated, if I'm honest. A little bit too technical. But
you're not the target audience, Barry.
She kind of explained that Poland had moved further up the pitch and they were isolating Marek Hamzic and Andrzej Duda, who were Slovakia's best players. So then Poland equalised and then had Gregor Krakowiak sent off for a second yellow just after the hour mark. And that kind of finished them, really. On ITV, they had Philip Walton, who thought both yellow cards were justified. All three pundits, Nigel de Jong, Ali McCoist and Eni Aluko, thought it was unfair and that it shouldn't have been a second yellow. I think it was probably fair enough to book him, and he gave the ref a decision to make. So, yeah, that kind of ended the game as a contest, really, and Slovakia went on to win. A brilliant goal by Skriniar, actually, who turned on the proverbial sixpence to lash a shot in.
You called him Oliver Mack. He's called Robert. I don't know if you just want to just pick up and just say...
Did I call... Where the hell did I get Oliver?
No, I hope you did that for the whole minute by minute.
It wouldn't be the first time. I once called Edward Mendy Benjamin for an entire minute by minute report. Much to my shame.
Anyway, let's keep that in then, Baz, if you don't mind. It's quite funny. On Robert Mack, some disturbing Twitter thread, Jim. Oh. Mack scores. Lars Sivertsen wrote, return of the Mack. Archie Rintutt, once again. Lars again. His nickname is the Knife. Philippe. You thought Philippe is better than this. When his picture is taken, does the photograph say, and cheese? I mean, I know it's not first language for
There's
Lars.
No need for that, Philippe. There is Seriously. No need. And did you say Philippe is like the...
Absolute.
He's the kind of godfather of the pod. And you think, you're the one that everybody thinks Philippe can't put a foot wrong. And then he goes and does that. Very disappointed in him.
He didn't want to, but he joined in. We disassociate ourselves from any of those Mac-based jokes, which are way inferior to referring to Daniel Sun as a character from Karate Kid. A lot of the discussion, or as far as I can tell, Jacob, the only discussion with Poland is about Lewandowski not having teammates as good as he has at Bayern Munich.
Yeah, I feel sorry for him. They're always just consistently disappointing, aren't they? They were poor at the last World Cup. There was a bit of a feeling that they were going to beat Portugal at the last Euros, and they didn't, and they just turn up and there's big things expected from them, and then they fail to deliver. I suspect that there's a lot of frustration within their fan base about that.
Poland were a little unlucky with injuries, so he normally plays up front with a strike partner, but both. The first and second choice strike partners were both injured, so that sort of stymied Poland's chances a bit. But go back to what Emma Hayes said again. She said it's like he's not on the field, and he doesn't have anyone in that team with the calibre of, say, Thomas Muller at Bayern Munich.
Yeah, friendly neighbourhood Viking did say that. Hey, Max, just wanted to heap praise on Emma Hayes. She was fabulous. Actually understood the role of summariser, commentator, co-coms. Tells you what's happening and explains why. It almost feels she was on in the UK for listeners who don't know, is the Chelsea women's manager, got them to the Champions League final this year, won the league. And it almost feels a cliche to praise her because everyone praises her, but I can't think of a sort of better COCOM, especially in terms of explaining what is happening on the pitch and explaining tactically what's happening on the pitch?
Well, if I can go in two-footed on Emma, as I've already said, I found some of what she was saying a little bit too technical, and she might want to simple it down a bit for this thickie at the back. A
couple of news pieces coming out of the Euros. Marko Arnautović, we mentioned his sort of very angry celebration yesterday. Since then, the North Macedonian FA have called for UEFA to investigate his remarks towards North Macedonia supporters after he scored that goal. He said there were some heated words yesterday in the emotions of the game, for which I'd like to apologise, especially to my friends from North Macedonia and Albania. His father's Serbian. He said on Instagram, "I'd like to say one thing very clearly. I'm not a racist. I have friends in almost every country and I stand for diversity. Everyone who knows me is aware of that." The Football Federation of Macedonia strongly condemn the nationalistic outburst of Austrian player Marko Arnautović, they said, after a goal scored in yesterday's game, addressed to Alioski, the Leeds player. They said, "At the same time, we inform you that we have submitted an official letter to UEFA demanding the harshest punishment for Arnautović." The Guardian reporting, there's historic tension between Serbia and both Albania and North Macedonia over the sovereignty of Kosovo, a former Serbian province that declared independence in 2008. So we'll keep you posted on that.
It's not a very nice story, is it? But like his statement where he said that he's got friends in almost every country.
It's mad. In fact, your producer Joel was saying, I wonder whether to bring it up, would there be a good game show where Marko Arnautović is on a, you know, he's just there under a spotlight and then just somebody says Belize and Marko Arnautović has 5 seconds to tell you who his friend is from Belize and it moves on. How many countries do you reckon, Marco?
Or what about Pointless? It's made up for Pointless, isn't it? Yeah. the last question in Pointless, what is the country where he doesn't have any friends? Richard Osman.
There's it. Alexander Armstrong. As soon as somebody says, what's that one that always goes Pointless? According to producer Joel, it's the Central African Republic, which has been the most pointless answer the most times. So what we need to find out is if Marko Arnautović has a friend in the Central African Republic. It is, as Richard Osman says, a sovereign state that is a member of the UN in its own right. Some other questions. Simon says, what's happened to the little car delivering the balls? Maybe it was just one car. It's on its way to Wembley for the final. It's struggling to get over the Alps. Mike says, with reference to Only the Young, I remember the audience member who would only shout Only the Young at every quiet moment. He says, I still shout it anytime I'm somewhere loud and there's a lull. Good for you. Parrot News, Stuart's been in touch from Orange in New South Wales. Many thanks for your podcast, which I've been subscribing to since 2006. I just wanted to point out the number of pundits have commented on Jesse Lingard's Insta post during the England game. In particular, they've commented on the parrot he had on his shoulder. I hate to disappoint everyone. It's not a parrot. It's an Australian cockatoo, brackets galah. Max, I would have thought you'd have known better being married to an Australian. I've spent the past few days post our large snow event trying to keep them off my lawn as they can be hugely destructive, ripping up the grass like a plough, not to mention how noisy they can be. I hope everyone's okay post the Denmark game, particularly Barry. Stay well all. Thanks to all the team for your highly enjoyable work. Thank you, Stuart.
Well, Alf Stewart on Home and Away is famously anti-galah, isn't he?
He is anti-galah.
Flyman galah.
Exactly. Now, Barry, you weren't on yesterday, so you didn't get to revel in the sort of slightly worrying amount of praise that the pod and you personally received. I know you're finding it awkward because it's not a position you often find yourself in.
Well, yeah. I mean, I just wrote down what was happening. I don't think... Which is what I was supposed to be doing. So
you're not the hero. You're right.
No, anyway, I'm really not the hero here.
Anyway, we're going to read a couple more emails and then that's it. No more praise, please. Jared says, hello, Max and the crew. I wanted to thank you for your thoughtful insight after the Denmark-Finland match and the near tragedy we all experienced. Your reflections were spot on and heartfelt. But as a physician, I just wanted to add one last point, that this was a near tragedy. The reason it wasn't a true tragedy was not because doctors have magic healing hands, but that someone did CPR. Everyone should learn CPR. All it takes is an afternoon class, and it's so simple, even Barry could learn it. I love that even in this heartfelt message, there's a dig at you, Barry.
Now, hang on a second.
Yes, okay.
Now, I've mentioned this on at least, I would say, 5 podcasts.
Right.
And it keeps getting edited out.
Jared says, cities that have an aggressive public education campaign with CPR classes have seen improved outcomes for out-of-hospital cardiac arrest in their area. CPR saves lives, and you don't have to be a doctor to make a difference. While these experiences make us all reflect about the existential, don't miss the practical lesson staring you in the face. Learn CPR. Thank God Christian's okay. God bless you for the work you did this last year, keeping me laughing during COVID. Cheers from America. And one last, which is from Leslie. Hi, I listen to nearly every episode of Football Weekly, and no, I am not from your usual demographic, being a woman who's nearly 60. A couple of years ago, my adult son bought tickets for one of your live shows as a Mother's Day present. We went along, sat in the front row. I didn't embarrass him too much, enjoyed the evening, and Barry gave him a beer. I work in support services for children and young people in the care system and take into account the effects of trauma and secondary trauma every day. I support Manchester City. I struggle with the morality about where the recent money comes from. I first watched them in the 60s with my dad, who's no longer with us, and my grandfather covered City for the Manchester Guardian. Your discussions on the dilemmas around supporting a team with questionable financial resources have helped me navigate my thoughts on this. I wanted to say your discussion on what happened to Ericsson was informative, reflective, and showed respect to all involved. I could hear how it had understandably affected you, and I just want to say, take good care of yourselves. Also, I know my 2 children would say I should give you my usual response of make sure you drink some water. Best wishes, Leslie.
Max, you're in grave danger of dislocating your shoulder from clapping yourself on the back over this podcast.
I'm reading you some praise, Barry. And when
I prefer the abuse.
When she says drink some water, what have you been drinking this pod?
I'm currently about a third of the way through a bottle of Rioja.
I've just seen a clip of Ronaldo at his press conference. Just like looking at 2 bottles of Coke in front of him and just disgusted, absolutely disgusted, and he moves them away.
Arguably, if it's a comparison between Barry and Ronaldo, who's healthier?
put it to a vote.
I think we should. Anyway, that'll do for today's pod. Jacob, thanks for your time, mate.
Thank you.
Thanks, Barry.
You're welcome.
Cheers, Jim.
Cheers, man.
We'll be back tomorrow.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.